It's 1242. It's Intermezzo on 90.7 KRWG, and it is my great pleasure to welcome Brad Richter and Victor Ouzer into our studios for the first time. They'll be performing tonight. It's the Las Cruces Civic Concert Association series at the Rio Grande Theater at 7:30, and tickets are available at the door. Welcome to you both.
Thanks for having us, Leora.
Thank you.
Great to see you here. Both of you have pretty serious classical music background, but you have on this CD that we've been listening to over the last several weeks, String Theory, a lot of other influences, rock and folk, world music, and film music. So let's start with just talking first about how you met and formed the duo, and then also how you came to explore so many musical influences.
Well, we met originally in Ogden, Utah. Victor's a professor at Weber State University, and this is Brad talking. I was hired by the Weber State Cultural Affairs to write a piece for the university, and it included cello and Victor. I talked him into being that cellist, and then we hit it off pretty fast and saw that we shared musical tastes and as well as this latent desire to be rock stars that we could never fulfill, so kind of sneaking it into our classical arrangements, some rock songs and other influences.
Now, both of you have some rock background. Did you not both perform in or at least play in rock bands when you were young?
We did, yes.
All right, just tell
us. Yes, we did.
All right, so tell us a little bit about that experience. Each of you, how about Victor next? Victor Ouzer from Yugoslavia originally.
Yes, originally from former Yugoslavia, now Serbia. We were both always interested in it because we appreciated some of the songs, and this is particularly a simple songwriting that has an appeal about the rock or, you know, pop music. But then, of course, there were some groups that expanded that a little bit further and wrote some more extensive things. But that's what really attracted both of us, is that there is beauty in that kind of songwriting, which is a form that serves very well and yields toward arranging that for classical instruments. So when we were younger, when I was a student in Moscow, I actually, with my friends, formed a band. It was international band of, we had a violinist, composer, another cellist, and myself, that formed a band and then wrote our own songs, and that was our hobby. But we were few of the, probably the only ever rock band to exist in Moscow Conservatory.
Well, that sort of surprises me, actually. I would have thought that there might be a little bit of a rock influence there. I know it came slowly, but still. And Brad, you also were a guitarist and a singer, I think.
Yes, when I got out of high school, I was moving around with a rock band, trying to get gigs and sleeping in cars and doing that sort of thing. And we settled in Los Angeles for a while, and I ended up playing in the Whiskey A Go Go and some of those rock clubs that used to host the Doors and Led Zeppelin. And although I would play at midnight after all the important acts were done playing, and but during that time I was getting more and more interested in classical music. So in a way, I moved the opposite direction. I started with rock and then got more and more interested in classical and went that direction. And I think Victor had more classical training early on and did rock and roll as a sidebar. But one of the interesting things we do is when we write even classical music together, we write it a lot like a rock and roll songwriting duo would write. One of us starts with an idea and we share it with each other and bounce it back and forth. We improvise a little bit. But it's still like, that's how we wrote the La Folia variations that you just played. It was some jamming, some writing parts and sharing them, but it was very co-written.
Well, that was going to be my next question. How did you write that? But you don't live in the same city. You live pretty far apart. Brad, you're living in Arizona?
That's right.
And Victor in Utah.
Yes.
So, you know, if somebody were listening in Boston, they would think, oh, well, they're both down in the Southwest. But it's many, many, many hundreds of miles apart. So are you video conferencing on the phone, sending clips on email?
Yes, we are, and that's basically what we do. We talk a lot on the phone. we exchange some of the digital files, such as Finale, where we actually write the music and then the other one has time to listen to it, play, try, and then suggest. So we bounce those back, and the way we do that is we always update it with the most recent date. So it would be La Folia, Brad, and then the date, and then I would bounce it back, La Folia, Victor, the newer date, and then eventually we reach the word final.
takes a long time
but
sometimes.
The most important part after that is really us being, when we are on the road. And we don't have a lot of time, such as right now. Yesterday we had a great day here in Las Cruces, and we actually had time to work on some new arrangements and a piece that we are preparing for our next CD. But that's when we really get the most inspiration, because we get to brainstorm and try things, and then when we both leave to our homes, we are fresh with ideas and we have our goals set on what to do when we meet next, which is in about a month.
Let's go back a little bit to your earlier background, because I think I read that you both started playing at 12, which for professional musicians is not that young. And Brad, you already alluded to this. You'd had no formal, I think I read that you had no formal musical training, and you were completely self-taught until you won this great scholarship to the conservatory in Chicago, and then you went to the Royal Conservatory of London. So you had a very fast trajectory upwards in the institutional music world.
Well, I worked hard, but I had some luck as well. There are a couple of things along the way that helped me get there that were just wonderful coincidence. But
teachers? People?
Well, like a specific thing was when I got into the Royal College of Music, I had visited a festival in England the year before, and my eventual teacher, Carlos Spinell, was at that festival, and he asked me at a very opportune moment to play a piece I had been wanting to play for him. I was very warmed up, and I played it unusually well, and because of that, he waived my audition. And then at the panel interview, they'd only had one other guitarist in their master's program, and her dissertation was published in a guitar magazine, and I read it the night before the interview just by coincidence, and that was all of their questions were based on that dissertation, because they didn't know much about guitar. And I just had a long series of things that kind of helped me get there and then kind of claw my way up to the right level once I was there.
Well, luck often plays a part, but mostly it's hard work. Sounds like you did that. And Victor, you also started at 12, which is not that young, especially for a cellist who then goes to the Moscow Conservatory. So tell us a little bit about your early music life.
Well, I started with the piano, so that did help me understand the structure and be able to read music better. But then when I was 12, I guess my luck was that the school that I went to was a school for gifted children that was a boarding type school for the whole Yugoslavia, but it hosted about 34 at the time total students for just violin and cello. And that school was about 6 miles from where I was from. And they accepted me. They gave me a little trial to prove myself. And the rest was really kind of a natural flow of me falling in love with the cello and just working and playing, and things worked well. That in 5 years, after 5 years, I was accepted in Moscow Conservatory. So I don't even remember how exactly that worked, but I guess that it was supposed to be like that. It worked well that way. Of course, teachers were great in that school, and it was very inspiring to be there.
How long did you live in Moscow?
6 years after that, and then I moved to the United States in 1995. It's been a while.
and the two of you met many years after that.
2005.
2005. Yes. So it's been eight years that you've been performing,
yes,
performing and writing together. You've got a particular love of doing what we call mashups, kind of bringing music from really different influences and seeing what will happen. And so we've got traditional folk music and classical music and Stevie Wonder, David Bowie. You've alluded to this a little bit, but let's hear a little at a greater depth how you find this music, how you decide, why don't we try this with The Flight of the Bumblebee or Leyenda, which you have on some of these. How does that happen?
Well, I think each time we try to dig a little bit deeper in terms of how we integrate the songs. Like our very first mashup was Miserloo and Bumblebee, which in a way isn't a mashup. We play Miserloo and sort of pause and then play Bumblebee. But now we're kind of into making canons out of the melodies and overlapping them and treating them like a classical composition. But I don't know, each one evolves in a different way. We have some sort of core song or idea that we want to bounce off of, and then we start to brainstorm about, well, what would fit with that? What has a similar rhythm? What has a similar concept? And how could we mix them?
Do you ever hear music happen that's being performed or written right now, like the latest groups or latest singers, and say, wow, that's something we could work with?
We have a more contemporary one that we're playing. We're recording it tonight at the Rio Grande to submit to performance today. But a mashup of Rhapsody in Blue, where we mix in Smells Like Teen Spirit, the Nirvana song, Seven Nation Army by the White Stripes, and Sweet Dreams by the Eurythmics. And we kind of keep coming in and out of Rhapsody in Blue into those, with all of it overlapping. So that's our, feels at least at this moment, like our ultimate mashup.
Importantly for the Rhapsody in Blue, we are not really touching the Rhapsody in Blue part.
That's a good point.
It's our best to our ability arrangement of the piano score, original piano score by Gershwin. So whenever they start overlapping, that's already changed. So Gershwin is untouched. That's a very great piece that we didn't really want to mess with or do anything wrong with it, which would be anything we did to it would be wrong, other than adding things at certain points. Yeah.
Huh. How much are you on the road?
Quite a bit, maybe about a third or a quarter of the year, from September to May in the performing arts academic year season.
Uh-huh. And Brad, are you also teaching?
At the University of Arizona.
Okay, so you both have teaching posts as well. When you're playing this kind of music where you're blending different styles, what's the, generally speaking, the audience reaction? Is it usually very enthusiastic? Do you ever get, people who are very resistant to mixing the classical with
rock? I would say that usually it's accepted really well, because we are doing it in a way where it demonstrates skill, classical music skill, but then the way we feel about it also reflects our experience with those other genres. So if we do get, very rarely, maybe negative comments, that would be somebody who have never had any affinity towards rock or folk music, and that's fine. It's just a matter of taste, let's put it that way.
And I think it's also someone who wasn't paying attention to what they were getting into, because it's pretty well, if someone's looked us up, they know that we're going to play rock music along with classical music. But we do get that. Someone comes to expecting a classical guitar cello duo, and we do a lot of classical, but it's certainly not purely that.
Do you ever, it sounds like when you come up with these arrangements, it's fixed by the end, but I'm just wondering, do you ever improvise when you're on stage, or does that happen in the practice rooms with each other?
We do improvise, yes.
Do.
We do have specific places where we do improvise, that we have preset for improvisation. And sometimes there are a few little things that we change along the things that we are playing that are usually related to rock music. We don't improvise the classical pieces that we are, but usually we have places that we purely improvise. Yes.
Yeah.
I have to say, sorry, I always embarrass Victor with this sort of thing, but I've never met a better improviser among classical musicians than Victor, and he does crazy things on stage, and sometimes I'm not expecting it, and it's a fun challenge to try to keep up with it. One of my favorite improvs of Victor's is the La Folie version that Performance Today played. That just came out of the blue and was so beautiful. And I just sort of sat back and tapped my guitar a few times while he was doing that. So anyway, it's a thrill for me to take part of that. And I'm learning to improvise better as we go along.
Well, it's a tradition in classical music to improvise,
right,
too. So, you know, it goes way back. And in fact, I loved in your liner notes how with La Folia that it's kind of come full circle, because La Folia means sort of the crazy one, the crazy one, so, or the crazy dance. So, you know, that you end up with a kind of rock element brings it full circle to just a new time of very eccentric, wild music, which is what it was.
It also felt like a natural evolution of that composition, because it was building and building, and once that seemed like the logical last step is to really give it that rock energy in the end to reach the plateau we seem to be stepping towards as we were moving through the piece.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm finding it very interesting. So all the musicians they're coming through and that I'm getting their CDs who are blending really different styles, world and folk and rock. I've been talking to the Richter-Uzer duo, Brad Richter and Victor Uzer. I'm Leora Zeitlin. Thank you so much for joining us today, Brad and Victor.
Thanks
for having us.